The hottest Knicks tape you'll find online. Knicks all day. We bleed blue and orange. This is Knicks Fan TV, your one-stop shop for the ultimate New York Knicks fan experience.
Throws it down.
News, rumors, debates, post-game live streams featuring live callers.
Let's go Knicks, baby!
And now, your host, CP, the NY Fanatic.
Special edition of Knicks Fan TV, CP on the check-in. Tonight's guest spent 13 years in the league, 13-year veteran, five with the Knicks from 05 to 09, as well as the 2012-2013 Knicks Tape team, one half of the best podcast in the game, the Knuckleheads podcast, Quentin Richardson in the building, a.k.a. Q Rich. Q, thanks for giving me some time, man. How you doing, bro?
And I'm good. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. So, you know what? I want to start this off Knucklehead style as we kind of, you know, talk about your journey and your time with the Knicks. First, I gotta hear, who was the first player to bust your ass in the league, man, as a rookie coming in?
I've told this before, man, but it was Rashawn Leonard. Leonard, he was in Denver. So, you know, I got drafted to the Clippers, obviously West Coast team. So that preseason, I got a chance to start. You know how they do sometimes, give you throw a rookie out there, let them start or whatever. So I get to start. It's at Denver, and you know, I'm a young kid, oblivious really. I'm like, man, whatever, this was Rashawn Leonard. I'm taking it lightly. I'm like, I'm about to do my thing.
Yeah.
And that first 6 minute timeout,
buckets.
Came to the bench, that man had 17 points. I'm talking about giving me everything.
Everything.
You know, between the altitude that I was not prepared for and then just his game, I wasn't respecting his game the right way. And he came up and tuned the young fella right up real quick. And he was the first one to give it to me.
Hey, I got to tell you, as a member, when he played for the Heat, because you know Knicks and Heat was bitter rivals. So when Riley went over there and built a carbon copy of the Knicks there, but Rashawn Leonard used to give us buckets, you know, three-pointers after three-pointers.
He one of them ones that really, you know, don't why talk a lot about, but he gave a lot of people buckets.
Buckets, man. That's hilarious. So you spent 4 years with the Clippers. Short year with the Phoenix Suns, that offensive juggernaut with, you know, D'Antoni, Steve Nash, Stat, the Matrix, everybody else. And one day you pick up the phone and you trade it to the Knicks, man. What was that day like for you? How did you hear and what was your reaction?
Yo, let me tell you, I was pissed. No lie told. It was crazy though, because I was literally in New York when it happened.
Yeah.
So I get the call. I was doing a Jordan shoot. Mm-hmm. I was shooting a commercial. It was when Common had got on the little campaign. It was a part of it, and it was like me, Terrell Owens, and Mello.
Yeah, I remember that.
We did like the we did a video in Brooklyn for Common's song, I think Go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was part of the whole thing, and we did the 106. So I'm there for like four or five days. And I get the call like in the toward the end of that trip, and I'm like, so you got to understand at the time, the context, we just had the best record in the league when I was with Phoenix that year, and the Knicks had the worst record.
Yeah.
So I essentially went from, you
worst,
know what I'm saying?
Like, first to worst. From,
yeah, first to worst. And I was sitting there like, it was one of the most fun seasons I had in the league. That was my first time being a part of a winning, you know, team and going to the playoffs and going that far. And I felt like I had 1 year that and got shipped back to the bottom. I was like, you know. And I tell you the biggest thing that was the big, like, I'll tell you what was probably more disappointing than anything to me. So that whole year when I first moved, I signed a 6-year deal, right? So I bought a house and I started building a house. I was building a crazy house. So while I'm building that house, I was living in like a little rental house that was not far. So every day after practice on the way home, I'll slide by, see the crib, see how it's going.
Fill it in a little bit.
Bruh, that trade happened like when I got back, they were supposed to have the swimming pool full, you know, putting the water in the pool. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go over there, kick it, whatever. Never even went back. Never even went to see it. get rid of it. Like, I was like, yo, like that right there, that was, that hurt for a long time. Yeah. No lie.
That part of the business has to get tough, man. Like, do you ever feel like whenever you go to a team, you could really be all the way comfortable? Like, how you even, you know, navigate that?
I think for me, after the Phoenix to New York deal happened, I was just, you know, even though I stayed in New York the whole time, the rest of the way, I played the deal out that from that point. But like, for me, it was just like, it was crazy. It was like, damn,
yeah.
Like, I really was like locking in with Phoenix, and then it was like, boom. And so for me, then at that point, it was like, especially in New York, because it was so tumultuous. I always felt like anything could happen after that.
True story, man. So when you get to the Knicks, is there, you know, you played 4 years plus Knicks tape. Is there one game or moment, you know, at MSG that really sticks out to you as your favorite?
I can't even really say just one, man. Just know, you know, for me, I'll never forget those games where, you know, like, because the Garden is a special place, mm-hmm. and New York City has a way of showing up and showing out, like, when the greats come through and when the special players come through. So for me, it was, you know, for the longest time coming in, I always wanted to play well there. Then once I became a Knick, for me, it was like, it was a different take on it. Like, okay, I know what it feel like for guys to want to come here and what they want to do. I felt, you know, like, I want to protect this house. Like, when I'm here, you know what I'm saying? I want to make it hard as hell on whoever it is, whether it was, you know, Carmelo before he came to the Knicks, or LeBron, or Kobe, or whoever. Like, I'm going to fight tooth and nail to try my best to not let them have those. Yeah. So, and, you know, for me, those were always memorable nights, because it would be jam-packed. You would have, you know, a lot of the other team's fans, and it would have that vibe that you live to play for, where it's the whole crowd is jumping. Like, forget about what our record is tonight, because it's one of them nights. And like, those were the nights I love.
The energy at MSG is unmatched, man. You're definitely right on that. And, you know, I had JC on, I had Channing Frye on, and I had to ask him the same question I'm going to ask you those my guys, you know, but I liked what Isaiah was putting on paper, you know, bringing in Steph. I remember when he brought in Steph, I was such a huge Steph fan. That was one of the greatest days in my fandom. You, JC, Eddie Curry, you know, drafting Nate, Channing, D. Lee. I liked his vision, but it just never really moved the needle. Like, what would you say was the reason behind the lack of success for those teams?
Man, we talk about this all the time. I 100%, especially being removed from it and looking at hindsight, I could see what Isaiah was doing.
Yeah.
None of us knew at the time that it wasn't the right time. It was like, for everybody, for whatever reason, everybody went through a lot of stuff during those times, and then things changed from that point. But if you look at those individuals that he brought in, if you would have brought that group together, and like I say, in real time, nobody knows this, but if you would have brought that group together a year or two earlier, while everybody was in a different place, who knows what would have happened? Or if just things wouldn't have went the way they went while we were there. Because it was like, if people really knew.
It's heavy stuff going up.
Yo, I'm talking about on so many levels, so many different directions, so many different ways. It was crazy.
Damn.
And so, like, it was that, like, all of those things playing to what was going on. And when we look back on it, like I talk to Nate, Eddie, and those boys all the time, and Channing too. And it's like, we laugh and talk about it like, yo, we were supposed, like, I just had Steve Francis on the other day. We was talking about it. It's like, we should have been way better than we. And then when we talk about it, like, yo, we'll say that in one breath, then be like, yo, it was crazy.
It was just simple.
It's like, I'm telling you, man. And it's like, you know, none of us are those type of people to really come out and say, yo, it was all. But if anybody ever did, Lord have mercy. Do you hear me? Oh, don't nothing need to be sensationalized. We don't need Hollywood. We don't need nothing. It is just everything.
Just the facts alone will blow you away.
Man.
That, man, that, that, That's crazy, man. And it's also crazy because, you know, when I listen to the Knuckleheads podcast, and part of the reason I love it so much is the stories that some of the former Knicks come on and tell. To a man, everybody vouched for Isaiah. You know, and then from a fan perspective, we're looking at it from the outside in, and the media is just trashing him. You know, the L's is piling up and the stories is piling up, so on and so forth. But it seemed like to a man, you know, especially with you, you know, it seemed like Isaiah really helped you through some dark times. But it just seems like, you know, again, like you said, with so much piling up, it just seems like there was so much forces that the structure, as Steve Francis said, just wasn't there to help you guys right the ship. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, man. For me, like, I say this all the time, like, even, you know, I work at Turner, worked at Turner with Zeke and stuff like that. And even before I ever played for the Knicks or anything, Isaiah was a big homie to all of us in Chicago. We all grew up looking up to him. He was the dude, the guy. And so for me, before, during, after, now, no one will ever hear me say anything bad about Zeke. Like I say, what he did for me and my family during the toughest time in my life, and then just like everything else, I'm not here to fight nobody else's battles that they got with them. I'm talking about me and how I feel about it. Nobody will never hear me say anything bad about Zeke. Love him to death, one of the best people, all of that.
That's real. That's real, man. Some of the stories that came out of Knuckleheads podcast, you know, Nate putting the X-Lax in Eddie Curry's cereal, or Dolan making a hype tape for you guys, using his band as the cover. You know, Steve Francis, you know, being the talk of the city and really embracing New York. Any other funny stories from that time that you able to share?
Man, listen. Listen, that we able to share. It's just, man, listen, people don't understand, like, Jerome James, Malik Rose, man, like, those teams were, like, and I'm telling you, like, we were what we were. Our record was what it was. It was some of the toughest times, but it's the craziest thing is, like, some of my best friendships and closest friendships are from those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, we talk all the time from whether it's City, whether it's Eddie, whether it's Nate. Like, Nate is everybody's little brother that they never had, even if they didn't want him. I don't care. Like, that, like, that's my little bro forever. Like, and, you know, Channing, all of those type of them different relationships, and you don't realize it. Like, people think one way about Channing Frye, and if they only knew.
Yeah.
Like, if they only knew, like, everybody should love and enjoy the national treasure that is Channing Frye. I'm going to just leave it at that.
I'll tell you, I certainly learned myself, but having him on the show and just, you know, how candid he was with me, man. I really enjoyed that interview with Channing Frye. He's a funny guy. He's definitely a funny guy. Another thing I loved about you, Q, was, as you said, you were signed to Jordan. The player editions are always fire. And you know, with Knicks fans and Jordans, it's always a conflict. Some Knicks fans are like, I never wear no Jordans. Me, I don't care, man. I got a box load of J's in the closet right now. The 11s being my favorite. Which one of the Knicks player editions was your go-to?
Whew. Now, see, I feel like the Knicks were some of my most prolific years as far as, like, footwear and PEs, because I feel like it was that sweet spot where they was really going hard at it. Because, you know, in my early years in LA, my last 2 years kind of caught where they were starting to do the PEs a lot. And then my year in Phoenix was crazy. But New York, man, I had
some heat.
I had some serious heat. I had some points in New York, but my favorites, like, I still got some of these to this day. I had the two, the retro twos with the Q Rich on the side, and then the fives. I had some fives that was fire. But the only thing I wish about back then is that I had a different number. I wish I still was like number three or number five, because 23 make it look like they just regular J's.
Yeah, it's true.
Because on the fives, they didn't do like no Q Rich. Now they just did our numbers, so it just looked like they was the regular demos.
Regular J's, yeah.
But like they was still crowd. When I came back and at the end in 12-13, like I had all of that heat to pull out. So know, I had Young Boy Shump and Swish, and it was like, yo, like, I was pulling out all type of old flavors. Like even Melo was like, oh, okay, I see you.
For me, it was the eights. For me, it was the eights.
They still sell them joints for like some some money out there, because they actually, you know what, the Ace was the one shoe that they actually came out at House of Hoops with when I was here, when I was in New York. So that was a pretty popular one, because people could actually get it too.
Indeed, man, true indeed. And you know, in a recent interview, you had talked about, you know, what it was like in playing for New York and the pressures of playing for the city and the potential impacts that might have in, you know, free agents coming, or, you know, how the rookies and stuff get treated. How do you feel like you were able to kind of navigate that pressure of playing in New York, dealing with fans who, you know, have lofty expectations? How do you feel like you were able to deal with that?
Man, I'm from Chicago, bro. Like, straight up. Like, that was the way I looked at everything. That was the way I approached, you know what I'm saying, life in general. And whenever, whether it was when I was in L.A. being drafted out there, when I played in every city I went to, I always took my Chicago mentality. I'm never going to do something in any other city that I wouldn't do on my own.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to try and go to New York and start acting different. So for me, and you know, I don't ever claim to like have lit the city on fire as far as when I was playing. Those weren't some of my best years. You know, I've talked about that openly, and you know, I was going through what I went through. Mm-hmm. But as far as like never succumbing to the pressures of, you know, all of the stuff that comes with New York, like that's not the type of person I am, man. I you know what I'm saying? I was mentally built different.
Yeah.
Being from where I'm from and went what I went through growing up, like fans booing or saying something to me wasn't gonna like ruin my day. It wasn't gonna make me not want to go out to eat or go out to the club or do whatever or just live my life. Nobody was gonna hold that type of power of me. And that's why when I speak on that, I've seen it. Yeah. I've seen people come to New York and shut it down like, oh hell no, like they don't even want to exist no more, because it's like every move you make is gonna be talked about and this, that, and third, and it's either you either care or you don't. And it's not a I don't care to the point where I'm just gonna be reckless. It's like I'm gonna always be, you know, straightforward and be trying to handle my business the right way. Nobody's gonna be perfect, but for the most part, I'm be trying to handle my business the right way. But like, I don't care what certain people think. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're not the president or the GM or a coach or, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to impress you, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna do what I know is right and try and move the right way. But other than that, and I think the other thing, you know, even with me not playing hard and, you know, gaining weight and doing all that stuff, like, when I went out there, I played hard as shit. You know what I'm saying? And I was with it. You know what I'm saying? Whether whoever it was, I wasn't backing down from nobody. I felt like that the city could relate to that mentality. Yeah, like, I'm a hard worker. I'm blue collar. I might not be the most talented, the best this or the best that, but, like, you're not going to disrespect me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're either going to give me my respect or I'm going to take it, and you're going to, you know what I'm saying, you're going to acknowledge that I'm here. And you know what I'm saying? I'm going to just demand that.
That's a fact. And you know, it's those type of players that the city really gravitates to. You know what I mean? And I got a confession for you, Q. I tested your patience 10 years ago, man. I've been waiting 10 years to tell you this story.
Okay.
April 11, 2010. Knicks versus Heat.
My birthday.
Knicks versus Heat at MSG. I'm riding around the city. The plug calls me, say, yo, I got 2 tickets to the game. I'm like, all right, cool. Last minute, called a homie up. I'm like, let's go to the game. They playing the Heat. Let's go. So our rivals, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, all right, let's go. Get down there. Go to the will call. Pick up the tickets. Oh, we right behind the Heat bench. Okay, let's go to war. We ready to go. We get down there, start ordering drinks. We 2 rows behind the bench now. So we start ordering drinks. We getting nice. So we're like, all right, we talking trash. Who we going to trash talk? Nah, I can't trash talk D-Wade. He going to kill us anyway. So we look over. I'm like, yo, we got to get Q. So we said, it was nothing personal. You know, it's just a rivalry. We there getting nice. So I'm like, yo, we got to go at Q. So the whole game, we talking trash. Q, you ain't got it no more. Oh, that's off. We talking to because T-Mac is on the Knicks at this time. So every time T-Mac get the ball, we like, T-Mac, dunk on Quentin Richardson. He don't got it no more. That's easy money all day talking trash. We had the whole bench going. Carlos Arroyo was cracking up because we was just cracking jokes all day. So finally, I think it was either a timeout when you came out the game. We still talking to you, still talking. And finally, you looked over at us like, yo, why y'all still talking to me? So I said, I looked back. I was like, yo, Q, I don't know, man, but I really just want to connect on those Jordans, bro. Those Jordan play editions are fire, bro. Could you just hook us up? Yo, I swear to God, Q, this is a true story, bro, from 10 years ago. So, yeah, man, nothing personal, you know what I'm saying? You still my guy, so especially when you play for the Knicks. But, you know, just being a typical obnoxious Knicks troll 10 years ago, man.
That's good. I kept a PG right there. You know? Yeah. We must have won that game. I had to be in a good mood.
Yeah, they did. They did, man. So, yeah, it was a memorable time, man. Memorable time. But, you know, just going back to that, you know, Chuck D always talks about MSG being a microwave and the Knick jersey being the heaviest in the league. And, you know, when we draft these players, a lot of times when I talk to fans, they talk about it not just being about talent, but being mentally tough. Because it's just such a tough place to play.
It's a mentality, man. It's, you know what I'm saying? Like, people like, you know, look at Derek Jeter and the whole way he was viewed, and then A-Rod. Mm-hmm, like, it's like, you have to be built a certain type of way. Like, even, I don't care, even with when you making the most money, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people still don't have fun. You know what I'm saying? If you're not prepared to stand in front of that media scrum and it be triple or quadruple what it is in some cities, and you know what I'm saying, you got way more crazy and more venomous questions coming at you, where you might not get none of that down here in Orlando or Oakland, Charlotte, or wherever else. But like, when you, and this is New York, like, it's 20 different reporters and everybody don't want the same good story. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sorry, that's just not the way it works here in the big city. Yeah. And I found that out quickly. And so, you know, for me, that's why I look at it when everybody say, that's why it's hard for me to sit there and put the blame on Dolan and just say, oh, it's just Dolan, it's just Dolan. Like, nah, bro. Mm. Like, people know what's going on, whether they say it or not. Like, people like, look, man, I'm trying to whatever point of their career they in, they trying to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Nah. The flip side of that that I always say too, it's a double-edged sword. Like, yeah, it's hard. But yo, watch that one who come in there and say, I want it, and come in there and really deliver it. He will be legend forever. Forever. Yeah. And I'm talking about everywhere. Like, when somebody choose and come do it in New York, they name going to ring across the world. They going to be the biggest endorsement, biggest everything.
True.
Everything. And whoever else on that team going to live on forever, whether they stars or not, you're going to have, that's, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th men being working forever because they was part of that team that was winning and that was loved. It's like, that's just what it is. When New York Knicks are good, the NBA is just that much more better.
100% facts, man. Couldn't have said it better myself. Knuckleheads Podcast, man. How did that start when you and D-Miles starting the podcast?
Man, so, you know, me and D both had, we did articles. So this whole thing is kind of like a Knicks reunion, kind of, so to speak. So my man Chris Bernard, whom I met, he worked for the Knicks forever. And it's crazy because Coach Cliff was his college coach.
Oh, wow. Full circle.
So once Chris Bernard left from working with the Knicks, he went over to the Players Tribune. So that was how many years ago. So you fast forward to a few years back. I did in conjunction with the show, The Shire, that was coming out, you know, the show that's out in the audience on Showtime. When it was first about the launch, they did a partnership with Players Tribune. They wanted to do a story about somebody from Chicago telling their story about, you know, being in Chicago, whatever. So I did a letter to my younger self, and that did really well, got a good response. So then I talked to D Miles, and he, you know, they were trying to get him to do a piece on himself, on him. And so when I had him do it, I was like the executive co-writer or whatever. And they got the chance to see our chemistry. And so they was like, Chris, like, man, we need to come up with something for y'all to do. Y'all got a chemistry. Everybody's saying this and that. So we was playing around with stuff, and we came up with the podcast, and it was like, D Miles wanted no parts of it. Like, camera, microphone. He like, nah, I'm
he's
good.
Not with it.
So it took some persuading and some posturing with that. But then we ended up we did a pilot right here on my patio. So D. Miles lives in Orlando now, and my neighbor is literally Drew Gooden, who played in the league. So he's there right across the street. So we like, man, we're gonna do it. We're gonna use Drew as the little the guest for the pilot. So it's me, D. Miles, and Drew. We do the pilot. Man, we get over here. It was like, it was crazy. We drinking. It was just, it seemed like to us.
It was like drink champs.
Right. It was like, it was crazy. Like, you know, this is the first time we ever do it. We ain't got no, we were drinking too much. We drinking, yelling, cursing, everything. So they get the tape back. They like, oh, this is crazy. They like, but it was good though. They was like, I mean, we need to clean some stuff up and do some, and you know, channel this and you know, kind of structure stuff, but like, this could be really good. Like, we like, you know, first we gotta, y'all can't drink as much. You like, you know, I mean, you can't curse as much. He's like, you know, so we kind of sat down and got back to the drawing board, and me and D drew lines in the sand about the direct directions and stuff and the way we wanted it to be. And man, we just pushed forward. We didn't really, you know how it was gonna go, but I mean, the response has been, you know, more than we could ever dreamed about. It's been crazy.
Yo, it's been great, man. And just hearing all the war stories and storytelling from guys that, you know, like the Sean Kemp one was one of my favorites of recent, because it's just like, everybody like, yo, where's Sean Kemp been? You know what I mean? So to hear him come in and tell the stories, you know, how Larry Bird busted his ass and how he became the Rain Man and just Seattle basketball on the whole. I thought the Sean Kemp interview was great. I think my favorite all time was definitely Kobe. I think Kobe's was definitely my favorite because, again, at that time, as he transitioned from the end of the game, you saw a different side of him that he was revealing, you know, and him really taking you through his journey, you know, on your episode in particular, just being that high schooler coming up in the game and how he had to learn from certain players and how he had to be humbled. And then the 61-point game at the Garden, you know, breaking it down, how he studied Wilson Chandler and his tendencies. And I thought the Kobe one was just great, you know, just from a basketball standpoint and as a man, just really starting to learn who he was, you know, taking that veil off from the Black Mamba and just, you know, more personal, you know, seeing a more personal side of him. Just tragic that we lost him, but definitely one of my favorite ones.
Nah, all of us, but you know, that was definitely a special one. Because like I say, you know, when you play in the game, man, everybody know, like, I don't care who you was, when any time and within the years, like 21, however many years he played, when he was in the NBA, I don't care who was MVP, I don't care who was this, that was like, he was the new Jordan. Like, he was the guy. You wanted him to know who you were. You wanted him to acknowledge you. You wanted him, like, not on some, you know, kissing his butt type stuff, but just like, you want the best to know. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so it was like for me and Deep to get a chance to do that and get a chance to holler at him and really see, like, okay, Cole rock with us. He respect us. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was dope from that standpoint and everything that went into it. But I mean, like you said, for us to get Sean Kemp, like us, we kind of pride ourselves in getting like them Loch Ness monsters, them guys that you don't really hear from, you don't really talk to. Like this week though.
Oh, you got this week.
I ain't gonna tell you, but this week though, this week we got this Bigfoot right here. You
okay. Is it MJ? I know MJ gotta be on your list. It gotta be on the bucket list.
If we get MJ, we just gonna drop the mic. Don't worry about that.
I know you and MJ close, so I'm sure you had to reach out to him already, but you know.
Listen, we get the MJ thing happening. I'm just gonna sit that right there and not say nothing. But like this week though, we got one of the Bigfoot Loch Ness monsters this week, and I'm kidding. It is gonna be sick. This man sat down with us just over 3 hours.
Damn.
And when you see who he is, it's like that man gave us 3 hours of his time and really let us know that he rocked with us. Yeah. And he rocked what we're doing, like blown away.
Looking forward to it, man. A couple more questions for you, Q. Definitely appreciate the time. You from Chicago, as you said. We talked about MJ. Wasn't born there, but give me your top five NBA players out of the Shy. Top five.
Oh, shit. You trying to get me in trouble. Listen, man. Isaiah, number one for me. I don't even like to do the number thing. I'm going to just give you my favorite five. My favorite five out the shot. Zeke. D Wade, D Rose, Anthony Davis, and Twan Walker.
I was just gonna ask. I said you gonna leave Twan out the mix because Twan was a baller, man.
Cyber Twan, come on, dog. That's big dog now. So you gotta put Walk Dog in there. People, how soon they forget?
Yeah, nah, you can't forget that.
Bust your favorite players' ass. Yeah, like Walk Dog gave everybody the business.
And Antoine Walker was a beast, man. I actually saw him after the Knicks versus Dallas game a couple years back. He was leaving the game, so and shouted us out. So salute to Antoine Walker for sure, stand up guy. Last question for you, man. You know, you spent 13 years in the league, number of different teams. You played with some of the greats. And your basketball journey itself was very heralded, coming up through Chicago high school hoops and DePaul, and again, 13 years in the league. How do you want to be remembered, man? What's the legacy of Q Rich look like?
Man, listen, at the end of the day, I persevered, I feel like. You know what I'm saying? I found myself at the end of my 13 years, I still started games in my you know what I'm saying, that year in the league. So for me, I came in as supposed to be a scorer. You know what I'm saying? Became was like a post player, became a three-point shooter. I just feel like I was somebody who was able to become whatever I needed to become. I was kind of like a chameleon. I was kind of, you know, able to recreate myself for whatever my coach needed me to be. And I took pride in that, man. I survived 13 years, and I always knew that once I got in the league that they weren't going to get rid of me easy. I was going to stick around for a while. So I take pride in, you know, beating the odds. Like they say, the average amount of careers lasts like 4 years. So I tripled that. And I always take pride in that when I go to speak to kids, because it'd be funny. You know, everybody don't always know who you are. And I'd be like, that's cool. I want to start right there, because that's a good starting point. The fact that I'm here, they brought me here to talk to you, and you don't even know who I am. Like, think about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a reason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just start there with it.
True story, man. Just as a quick addendum, who were some of your OGs that kind of helped you, you know, along your journey?
Man, listen. People who like, really, who were examples to me. I mean, my biggest influence was my pops and my sister. That's why I get my work ethic and my my go hard from and my know how to work. But guys that I watched that I got a chance to be close up to and see how to do it in the right way it was done, I really, really looked up to Mike Finley.
Big dog. You didn't put him in your top five. You didn't put Finn Dog in your top five, man.
No, but trust me, people know Finn and Juwan were like, they were the picture for professionalism for me. Like, I went to hoops, the gym, and worked out, and you know, the legendary hoops with Tim Grover and all that. Like, my chunk of really going there, those were the two OGs. Like, I get that. I used to call them like Mike Lowry, like bad, but them boys, they was bad guy. They always gonna come in some type of exotic car that you ain't really seen, and you ain't, you know, none of us young boys ain't. So I used to, you know, I get that 8, 9 o'clock, they icing up, reading the newspaper, they through already. Like, you know what I'm saying? They were just always, for me, they were that picture of professionalism, the way to do things the right way, the way to be in the community, the way to be on the court, the way to present yourself, the way to present the city. And so I always look at those two guys like, I want to, you know, say I got to be, you know, so I used to tuck my jersey in, like, seeing I got the, got the fan tuck going today, like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, them was my two OGs right there.
Yeah. That's dope, man. That's dope. And as you say, 13 years in the game, that's something to be proud of, man. As the average is four, you know, coming out of the shot. So that's a major accomplishment, man. But Q, I definitely appreciate all the time you gave and the gems that you dropped, man. And looking forward to the next episode of Knuckleheads. And what's your final, you know, message to the Knicks fans out there?
Man, I know it's hard, man. Be patient. Somebody coming. Somebody going to choose. Hey, listen, because I'm telling you, whoever it is, like, I'm telling you, when they get it, it's over. That's over. All it takes is it's some young boy out there growing up right now that's all they want to do is put the Knicks on, and y'all going to get y'all one.
Oh, hopefully. Like you said, they'll be king, man. But Q, thanks again, and hopefully we can do this again soon, man.
All right, man. Holla.